I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a five-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. I'll speak to people who remind us to take better care of ourselves. And what better way to take care of ourselves than to understand more about our bodies? This series, I've teamed up with Fitbit. Fitbit allows you to get to know yourself better and understand your health with insights that are unique to you. As I always say, knowledge is power, and Fitbit provides data about your health and well-being to help empower and support you in leading a balanced and healthy lifestyle. I'm so happy to have Fitbit on board, as my Fitbit helps keep me focused and on track with my goals and training. Being partnered with Fitbit is inspiring, as they're encouraging everyone to make positive changes, and I hope this podcast does too. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I chat to Emer Varian Barry. When Emer did a Q&A on her Instagram page one night, her followers asked her if she'd consider appearing on the Good Glow. We connected, completely hit it off, and made it happen. Emer has almost 100,000 followers online. She's originally from Cork, moved to New York and Australia, and met the man of her dreams. They've settled just outside London with their three kids. I can see why Emer is so popular. She's brutally honest about motherhood, and without even trying, is absolutely hilarious. Thank you to you guys for putting us together. I managed to grab her when she was in Dublin visiting the Aura Skin Clinic. I hope you enjoy. Emer, thank you so much for joining me on the Good Glow podcast.
Am I really sitting here?
I know.
Is this weird?
This real life?
Also, this brings me back to my Red FM days.
So basically, your followers got in touch with you. You were doing a Q&A on Instagram and they said, would you consider doing the Good Glow podcast?
Yeah. And I was like, who? I think I put up an answer to the question going, right, who are these people? Start tagging me and stuff. Yeah. And then I was like, I went onto your Instagram and I was like, oh, I love her. We should be besties.
Isn't it just so amazing that Instagram put us together? And that's why I put out questions last night, and I just asked anybody if they had any questions to send them in. So this will be a different type of podcast because we do have listener questions. But also, one of the questions that came back was they wanted to know a little bit about your background. And I read up a lot about you over the last couple of weeks, and you've lived in New York and Australia. You worked in Red FM back in Cork back in the day.
Red FM.
So tell us a little bit about your life, and I suppose why you made the decision to go traveling. And was New York the first stop?
Right, so I guess we have to go back a bit. Mm-hmm. Like really back to even like school time.
Okay.
Because I always felt like really, really lost in school. And I think like that's, it's like this underlying thing, isn't it, for some people, where it's like you're almost not allowed feel lost in school because, you know, Ireland has such a fantastic education system. And my dad was a teacher in the school that I went to for like 32 years. You know, my parents are like really well educated, and it's like education was like such a huge thing in my house. And I lived around the corner from UCC and from the Crawford Art Gallery. So it was like, you have like, you know, it just goes without saying that like, it's right there in your doorstep. Like, but what about the people that like feel totally lost with what they want to do in life? And some people find it really easy. Some people find it like I want to be a vet, and that's exactly, and this is what you do to be, and that's fine. But I was all over the place and I was really lost, and there was, I don't think there was any support, career guidance wise, for those lost people. Do you mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just totally rebelled against everything and everyone, and there was a lot of like family stuff going on as well at the time. And I actually just remember literally my dad trying to get me out of bed like the morning of my maths leaving cert exam, because I was just like, I don't want anything I'd like to do with school. I don't care how much it means to my future. I don't want a future. Like, I just want to stay in bed right now. Like, I don't. And then, I got awful results in art and English. Surprise, surprise, in what I'm doing today. I mean, I did fine in those. I always found them pretty easy. But like, I just didn't have a good time in school at all. And yeah, I just felt like I just hadn't a clue what to do. So I took some time out. I don't know, do you know Fox Pro Communications in Cork?
No.
So Dan Kiley, like, he basically like started above a pub, like a call centre with like five people working for him. And then I worked for him, Pageboy Communications. It was in that summer where I had thought about kind of repeating my leaving cert, and I was like, okay, right, I'll just give it another go. And to be honest, like, my parents, like, my dad's an artist, my mom's like a writer, she would have been like the best PR woman, but like, they were, I remember like sitting on my dad's lap and him just being like, it's okay. Like, he knew I was like on a different journey. Hello, he went to like NCAD in the 70s. Like, he got it. And and I remember I went into, so Dan's office, which was then Pageboy Communications, was right across from my house. Well, at home, I was like, great, I need to get a new job, or like a proper job, like to get me through the summer. I think I just finished up or like retail at that time, but I wanted to try something different. And I was like, there was no printer in the paper, there was no paper in the printer. I was like, there's like an office right across the road. We're talking about like where I'm from in Cork Friars Walk. It's like, there's no offices around. Like, it's a housing estate. But there was like one tiny office on the corner of Patrick's Road. And I was like, there's an office across the road. Should I just go over and ask them for paper? Like, obviously it's there. Why wouldn't I have it? And I walked in and I was like, hi, I was just wondering if you have any paper, because I need to like print it. And he was like, oh, what are you printing out? I was like, oh, my CV. I need to find a job. And he was like, yeah, do you want to start here tomorrow? Now, if anybody knows Dan Kiley, he is now, his company is like colossal. Like, he's in Silicon Valley. I mean, he owns one of the biggest Irish businesses to today. And so I started working with him the next morning. And he was a joy to work with. It was brilliant. And then they moved to BlackRock, and I didn't want to, it was literally right across the road from my house. So I was like, I'm not going to BlackRock. Anyway, these are like, what I'm trying to say is, I worked there for the summer. Anyway, I met somebody working there who was doing filmmaking in St. John's in Cork. So anyway, I was like, this sounds amazing. Like, I've always been really interested in photography. Like, I had a camera in my hand since I was like tiny, always obsessed with like filmmaking and all that and movies. So I started filmmaking in St. John's. Anyway, it came to my work experience time. The reality was, my parents didn't have the money to be able to like send me to Dublin. At the time, it was like Dublin, DIT, there's some amazing stuff in this city. But like, you know, how do you get those opportunities? You have to have money to be able to go to the city to like rent somewhere. Mm-hmm. And the reality of that is like, yeah, again, like money. Like, how, if your family doesn't have the money, then like, what are you supposed to do, right? So I was like, where? I was thinking to myself, I was walking home from St. John's up to Friars Walk, and I was like, I wanted to be in a studio environment. And I was like, Red FM, love Red FM. Got credit in the shop. I was like, you can do whatever you want to do. Like, this is like survival mode, right? You're like, oh, let's just do it, come on. And what's the worst that's going to happen, right? Got through to Red FM. Hi, I was just wondering if like you take out people for work experience. Sure. So I got a phone call back from the breakfast show the next morning, and I was in for 3 days. I was like, I got 3 days work experience in Red FM. What?
By picking up the phone and just asking for it.
Exactly. There was a producer leaving on the talk show. So I just like, after the 3 days, they were like, I was like, I'll do anything. Like I was like, I'll get the tea. Like don't make me go back to like not knowing what I do, want to do in my life. This is where I'm meant to be. Like, if you talk to anybody that worked with me on Red FM, I was upset. Like, I would just, there was no work hours that I would like stick to. I would be in the people, I adored everyone I worked with. You know what it's like in, I mean, it's not a 9-to-5, like it's producing and like presenting and all that. It's limitless to the amount of work you could do, you know?
And that's the thing about radio. It's really like, hey, you do this. Yeah. And then that's your job.
Yeah. I was like, okay, sure. Anyway, became producer of the talk show with Victor Barry. I was like, I'll do it. Why not? And that was very like, that was, the hours for that were a bit like, it was from 3 o'clock in the day until like, I mean, you'd get out of there at 1 in the morning. I was 20, and it was around the time where I should have been going mental, right? Like, I should have been, that should have been my mad time, but I was like really focused on my work. I was going out, but it was like, it wasn't, I was just really motivated with what I was doing. Anyway, I was interviewing like this lady that was working, she was from Cork, she was a stylist, she was working in Sex and City, interviewed her and met up with her. I went to New York one summer and met up with her for dinner, and then she was like, would you ever think about moving over here? And I was just like, someone like me, like,
to move to New York? No, like that would never happen. Like you have to be like a millionaire to live in New York. Like it would just never happen. And then I was like, but what about like, could I come over and like shadow you for like say 2 weeks? So I took holidays from Red FM and I was like, I stayed with her in her apartment and just literally like did everything, like all the shitty jobs. I was like, give them to me. And
so like you were working on Sex and the City?
Yeah.
Oh,
I'll show you photos in a minute. Yeah, I was mad. But you know, that's all great and everything. And you know, like that sounds amazing, but it's really hard work. And it's literally like a normal workplace. Like a movie set is just like a, everyone's just doing their job. Everyone's working their asses off. You know, like everyone's sound, like it's not like as glamorous as what it sounds. Mm. Like it's like a lot of work. I was only actually, like we were working on a lot of like the prep, but I was actually only on set like for a few days. But it was incredible, of course, like seeing rehearsals happening and all that. So, and Patricia Field and, yeah, like Kim Cattrall, like, oh, it was amazing.
Wow.
So, yeah, there was a few other projects that I worked with her on. And then I think it was the last day I was there and I was like, and she said, would you ever just think about moving over? And she's like, my friend can sponsor you. I was like, I could start working with her friend who was this amazing jewellery designer, like in her studio next door to her. And she was like, you can just stay with me. I was like, you know, when someone kind of just says something, I was like, what? Okay.
This is actually like, a possibility.
Actually possible. What? I was like, don't you have to get a visa? She was like, yeah, yeah. Like, you'll have to pay for the visa and, like, you'll have to get sponsored. We'll have to go through all that. But O'Malley Immigration, like, I got my... and it was a hard process. Like, I paid for, like, everything myself. And it was, like... You know, it wasn't easy at all. There is a lot. Anybody knows who has been through the American like system, mm-hmm. and like visas and all that. Like, I didn't qualify for the O visa because I didn't have enough experience, and I wasn't going down the like media route. Yeah. So 3 weeks later, I was in New York with like 500 quid in my bank account, like one suitcase.
One suitcase.
I got over my fiddle. Literally, like straight off the boat. I was like, it might come in handy.
Like, did it ever come in handy?
Just, no, it didn't. I know. I was like, I can always just busk. Like, yeah. And it was a wild time. It was mental, and I completely lost myself. And it was actually the best and the worst time of my life.
So, did you go mental in New York?
Like, how can you not? Mm-hmm. Like, it was. Yeah, I'm very at the time, not now. But I'm like, at the time, I think I was just quite easily led. And I ended up living with these like girls from the South. I was like working in restaurants and bars, and like it was a lot of work. I was working. Yeah, I was sponsored and I was like working with her. And then for extra money, I was like, yeah, it like, I don't even know where to start with how like hard New York was. And then it was like, I think I just became obsessed with, I think that was the start of like my anxiety, because I was very, very, very like, I was obsessed with kind of like, I put on a lot of weight because I was drinking and eating a lot. I was extremely self-conscious. I didn't know what it's the thing is as well. Like I didn't want to just do one thing in New York either. Like I ended up like assisting styling. You meet someone out in the piss in New York and you're working with them on set the next day. I moved to London and I was like, sorry, what's the second interview? I don't do interviews. I've never done an interview in my life.
Was there a moment then that you just said, I'm done with New York. I'm out of here.
It was so bad for me. It was so bad for me because like thing is, again, like I couldn't afford to like just come home whenever I wanted to. I think it was like a year at one point I had not been out of Manhattan. And like for me, some people can handle it, but like for me, I just needed to get out. It was too much. And also I had the utter like the disgusting feeling like deep in my belly that like, what are people going to think of me if I leave New York? I failed New York. Mm-hmm. And again, it was like what? Like, you're living this misery because I literally lived a miserable life because I was conscious of what other people thought of me. Like, what about actually what would make you happy? What? Like, I didn't have a support. I didn't have a support system there. Mm. You know, I did, like, my family, just they weren't able to come over and visit me. I'd go down to my sister in Philadelphia. Sometimes she was recording down there. Now and again, but it was like I actually looking back, like I was living, I was pretending on my Facebook that, like, you know, I was going to this party and I was going to that party and I was like working here. Yes, there, of course, there were like amazing opportunities and like things that I did in New York that definitely like I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing today mm-hmm. if I didn't experience all that, really.
But you were definitely led by fear back then because you were afraid to kind of admit that this wasn't for you.
It wasn't for me, yeah. And it, like, you failed in life, Emer, if, like, you were leaving New York.
Mm-hmm. And like, so did you go to Australia next?
Literally, I had, like, a crazy moment and I was like, I'm moving to Melbourne.
Wow.
And I booked a flight from New York to Melbourne. Like, my visa was up anyway.
Okay.
And I talked to, yeah, I talked to the lawyers at O'Malley Immigration. They were like, you can apply for the O visa, but like it was time.
And did you go to Australia by yourself?
Yeah, I met my sister in Hong Kong. She was just finished up at UCC, and I remember calling her and being like, "What are you doing now? Do you want to move to Australia?" And she was like, "Yeah, okay." Like, she's still there. She's living in Perth. And so we met in Hong Kong and then we moved down to Melbourne we moved straight to Melbourne, like St. Kilda, obviously, for anyone who's been there, they'll know. It's like the first place you go if you're Irish or English or like from wherever. Like,
and yeah, did the fiddle make it to Australia?
No, oh. I left it with my, yeah, do you know what? It was, oh God, the guilt. It was my, I think it was my great granduncle's fiddle, but Mallory still has it on her mantelpiece. Mm-hmm. She has brought it to the West Coast now.
Okay, that's
it's still,
good.
It's been taken care of. I was talking to her actually this morning. So yeah, I'm really still in contact with the girls from the South, and like, yeah, like they're such a huge part of my life, and all we do is just laugh back. It's the crazy, you know, nights out. It was like we just were mental. Like, I didn't do any drugs. It was all just, I know somebody said to me, they were like, you were in New York for 2 years and you didn't do any drugs. I was like, no, like, drink was enough for me. Like, it was, yeah, it was mental. It was amazing. But I think it was a time where I didn't have any self-worth, Georgie. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any self-worth at all. And I just feel so sorry at myself at that time. Like, I'll be completely honest with you. Like,
so did you feel then when you were reunited with your sister, like that sense of home or like grounding?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And it's tough because, like, I wouldn't recommend anybody, by the way, to move to New York with 500 quid in their bank account and like one suitcase. Prepare yourselves, people. And also prepare yourself. If you're thinking about moving to another country, just make sure you got money, because St. Kilda will, if you're in any way like me, like, I just like blew my money on nights out. I was like, yeah, yeah, I'll look for a job tomorrow. Anyway, ended up working in few call centres. God, that was awful, but like, I did it. I just hated it. I then started working at Madame Brussels, which is a rooftop bar, and it's kind of like Moulin Rouge meets like Wimbledon. I know it sounds crazy, but like, it was amazing. It was like a really liberal place, and like, we'd have like this event once a year, and it was called the Orgy, which, like, it was not an orgy. If you look it up, like, you'll see it was a very like burlesque-y kind of place. There's like men walking around naked serving oysters, you know, the usual. But, you know, it was just this really liberal, amazing place. And yeah, I was working there, and then I was working with a wedding stylist as well. So I was like, I need to get my shit together. I need to start doing what I love and what I'm good at. Stop with the partying. Stop with the being lost. Right. So I met Sarah and Marie, and they own the Style Co., which is, oh my God, their work. Like, it's insane. Anyway, again, just ended up doing a load of stuff for them. You know, we were doing stuff in the Yarra Valley, like winding tables through meadows, and wow, really hard work, obviously, like Australian, like 100 degree heat. But I was finally doing something that I was, that's when I'd always been styling, like at home I'd always be like changing or obsessed with interiors, like changing around furniture and like all the time. And it's funny, you know, like, I'm sure you're the same. You look back at your childhood and your, you know, when you were younger, and it's like, what were you pulled towards? Like, what was your gravitation? What were your interests? Mm-hmm. It's not a coincidence that people are doing what they love for a living, or sorry, doing what they're doing today for a living. And you look back and you're like,
that's what, yeah, because like myself and my brother Michael, we used to like make radio shows.
What?
When we were younger.
Hello?
I know.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
It's crazy.
So, yeah, where were we?
So you're in Australia, yeah. You're really happy there doing what you love.
Yeah, so you have to do your farm work within your first year if you're going to be doing your second year in Australia. And I was like under 30. So, yeah, I was like, oh, gotta hit the road. Gotta look for a farm to knock on. Come on. Give me some work. I need to stay in Australia. I love it. I probably could have sorted out sponsorship the first year with the company, but I still didn't really know if I wanted to stay there. It wasn't a healthy environment to be working in. It was like fun. It was the same as New York. It was like, it's fun while it lasted, but you can't be doing this forever, Emer, because it's not good for you. This will kill you. Such an extremism. Such an extreme person. So, yeah, so my sister had kind of like met other friends. Do you know what I mean? She's 3 years younger than me. She like, yeah, she met people and she went off to do her farm work, her banana picking. And yeah, I was like, right, might as well just do some like traveling while I'm at it, work my way up the East Coast. And my friend's mom then stayed with my friend's mom in Townsville. And we were literally going around to like bull farms being like, can I, like, God almighty. So dangerous. But anyway, like, can I have a job? God, looking back at it, no. And then somebody I knew who had been working there was like, this sounds so crazy now, but she was like, right, I got word that there's a job on an oyster ship in Darwin. I was like, great, I'll fly to Darwin, I'll get the job in the oyster ship, I'll just go out to sea for 3 months, get my farm work signed off, back to Madame Brussels for another year. Like, what? That was a bit crazy. Anyway, ended up in Darwin, booked into a hostel. And it was around the time where I was like, right, Madame Brussels is driving me crazy. Like, I love it, but it's like, I need to stop drinking. Thank you. Right, I'm just going to go on this like sober time, read, just have like really healthy time. Yeah. So I was like literally in Melaleuca and hostel, and I was kind of just like waiting to hear back about the interview when it would be and all that, the oyster ship. And I was like reading my book in the corner, and it was like at the hostel, the backpacking hostel. So like, you know, it's like, it's a fun place. And I was like, I'm going to chai latte. And I was like, I'm not going to get involved or talk to those really hot builders in the corner.
And oh, that was Daniel. Daniel.
Yeah.
So was it love at first sight?
Yeah, for me it was, definitely. For him it wasn't at all. He told his friend that like he thought I was really annoying the first night he met me.
That's so mean.
No. So I would, you know, I'm pretty outspoken, and like that's just me, like, but I used to be like really full on. Like, my children calmed me down a lot. I used to be like really full on, and like, yeah, I don't know, like, I think I just, like, that night you were just like all just, you know the way it is, and you're drinking and you're like just having a laugh, and like yeah. And then he was like chatting up this really hot like Swedish girl, and I was getting all jealous, obviously, and I was like, oh damn it. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I remember, like, again, the self-worth thing, where it's like, I was like, of course he's not interested in you, Emer. Like, how did you think that, like, he'd be interested in you? Like, yeah, so. And then I was like, oh, screw it, I'm just going to give it a go. So I put in, she went to the toilet. And I put my number in. No, what I said to him was like, do you put your number into my phone? And he put it out, and then I text him like across the table, and I was like, do you want to go for a drink somewhere else? So he like downed his pint, and we went like next door for a drink. And then I ended up sleeping with him on the first night, and now we have 3 children. Because I adored him. Like, I loved him. I do. Like, I really love him. And like thinking back to like that time, it was so like I knew, I swear to God, we, so basically like we were stuck to each other that morning. Like, he didn't leave. Like, he didn't leave the next morning. He didn't ask me to go. We went to the phone shop to get him a new phone across from like in the supermarket place, like across from the hostel. And he used my name as like his password. Like, we had literally, we had been together our whole life.
Wow.
Like, that's amazing. Straight away. And he didn't even like really show. It was like, oh God. You know the way, like, it took me so long to understand men.
Georgie, and to understand that they were different to us. I didn't have any brothers. I had two sisters. My dad was very motherly. He was very hands-on, right? I went to an all-girls school. I went to an all-girls secondary school, primary and secondary. I had severe anxiety when it came to talking to boys and men in general. Literally lived my life to impress men in New York. Was giving myself to them because I thought that that's what my worth was. Like, you know what I mean? That's how I thought I would impress a man, by giving myself to him. And it was like the fact that, like, Daniel didn't, he wasn't like, I love you, I love you, I love you the next morning. He showed me in other ways, and he still does today, ways that he really loves me, which I didn't notice for years. Like, we've been together 7 years now. Like, I didn't notice because I was like, I thought I wanted something more like expressive, but like actually looking at like who he is and what he does and the way he like shows that he loves me, it's like I was so oblivious to that for so long, right? And I think like that really, the change in me with that has like saved our relationship.
And did you find yourself becoming more relaxed than when you were together in terms of like...
Yeah, because my expectations weren't as high. Of course. So you have... Daniel's mother is incredible and I adore her to bits, right? He has always had an incredible mother. So high expectation of a woman, and then my high expectations of a man with the father that I've had and that I do have. Put the two of them together and it's like, you know what I mean? Like, I really do think that that has something to do with it in a relationship. It's like, and he doesn't have any sisters. He comes from 3 under 5 boys. I come from 3 under 5 girls. And, you know, like... I don't know. I just think like for a relationship, there's a lot of stuff that we both have to like realize, kind of like our ways of like being conditioned and stuff. And we have to be more acceptant of each other and our flaws.
It's amazing that when you're like talking about when you first met and those times when it was just the two of you, like you were getting emotional. Like sometimes when I think of myself and Jamie before Pia, like you kind of forget that, don't you, once you have kids?
Yeah, you do.
Like how much you were obsessed with each other and how much you were like pals.
Yeah, and the honeymoon period and the... Just the apps, like when you know, you know, like, you know what I mean? And yeah, like I loved Russell. So like, I really wanted to go back down to Melbourne. Oh, sorry. I didn't get the job on the oyster ship. Maybe it's because I went in there wearing like a vintage dress, red lips and my hair done. Right. Yeah. You're never going to last there, girl. I swear I could do it. Anyway, I got a job in a tomato farm in Bowen and there was amazing Irish girls that I met there. I was in the middle of nowhere and it was really hard work. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Really hard. But we got through it. Got my farm work signed off and moved back down to Melbourne with Daniel. So he got a job literally the first day we got there. There was a site at the end of the road that we lived in, and he just went up to the site manager, asked for a job, and he got one. And and then Daniel is huge family man. Like their older family is really close. Like my family just seems mental compared to theirs. Like they're all just really close and just like so level-headed, all of them. And he got really homesick because his brother had a baby. And I really didn't want to leave. But then I was like, oh, great. Yeah, I've always wanted to live in London anyway. So I might as well. I don't think he ever really even asked me. But I think it was like, it was really like that common knowledge, like between us. Like we knew. You know, like,
and it was time. You were basically would have followed him probably anywhere at that point because you were so in love.
Yeah, and and then we moved back. And we were living in Daniel's parents' house.
That must have been mad to go from living in Australia to living in his parents.
I think the maddest thing was like going back to like a really homely environment.
Yeah,
because I hadn't been. You know, I hadn't got. Remember, I went like America, like Australia. So I'd only been home like once
in between all of that. So I hadn't been home to like a homely family environment for so long. And I think that was like, I realized that that was like, oh my God, like, I didn't realize how much I missed this. And yeah, and his family are very like homely and stuff. And it was like his, yeah, parents, like, or his like teenage like box room. And then I found out I was pregnant. I don't know how that happened, Georgie. Immaculate conception. She's at it again.
And how did you feel when you were pregnant?
God.
Shocked or?
Really, I think like for a few days really happy. But then shit hit the fan and I was like, I don't have a job. Daniel's earning like 90 quid a day labouring. We don't, like, okay, so we got an apartment in Richmond and the rent was like £1,400 or something. Like, I was like, how the hell are we going? Like, I was incredibly sick as well with like awful nausea, morning sickness. Also, that's so huge. Like, why don't people talk about this more? You literally, if you have morning sickness and if you have a bad, you literally feel like you're dying.
Oh,
it's the worst.
I had it really bad and I remember I used to hide. We had this live room in Spin, which was this air conditioned studio, and the lights were always off because it wasn't in use, but I used to go in there and lie on the floor because I was so sick. And like, you can't tell anyone because no one knows you're pregnant.
Yeah, that's I kind of told everyone.
Did you?
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. The 12. Yeah. And I know that's incredibly personal for everyone.
Mm.
But I didn't even, yeah, like think about like hiding that. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's weird that I look back on it. I'm like, why didn't I tell people?
And I know, but well, I mean, like some people have it, you know, just in case, say, something happens.
And you don't want to get into it. Yeah.
And I know like everyone's personal, but I didn't know anyone in England, like, at that time. Like, I literally didn't know anybody. And
did you get a handle on the morning sickness or did it take 12 to 16? I used to find that eating little and often, like, I used to have like 3 breakfasts and like 2 lunches.
And also, what about when you're like incredibly sick and you don't want anything and then literally all of a sudden you could eat the whole fridge.
Mm.
Like, your body's like, okay, it's time now. So, yeah, I mean, that was a really, really interesting time, actually, because I was going for interviews. Okay, so look at my CV at that stage. And you're talking about, like, structural London. I was all over the place. You know, I didn't have anything. You know, I didn't have anything. There was definitely no like commitment on my CV.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I was like, but I was traveling, but I got skills. If I was looking at CV, I'd be like, it's just kind of, she seems a bit all over the place. I was applying to like all these agencies just for admin work. I was like, I can do admin work. No problem. Easy. Yeah. No one's going to employ me pregnant. Like.
So was your confidence quite low?
Extremely low. I was really sick. We had no money. I was like trying to like go into like, you know, like Office Angels, and it's like this agency in London, and just like, oh, it was just so bad. Like, I was doing all these temp jobs for like a week here, a week there, and it was just really crap money. And, you know, like 2 trains here. Ended up like at the end of it, I was like, I, you know, again though, I would have done anything for money.
Mm-hmm.
We'd know the choice. Like, you have to do what you have to do. Like,
and were you determined to make life in London work?
Yeah, like, yeah, it wasn't an option. Like, I was with Daniel, like his family were there. Like, yeah, at least there was that support system.
And were you happy at this time?
I think so. I really missed Australia. I really, really, really... I wouldn't have left Australia if it wasn't for Daniel.
Mm.
I'm obsessed with Melbourne. Like, I would never... I can never go back there. Like, if I go back, I'll have the whole trauma of leaving it again. So anyway, at the end of the pregnancy, I was so tired. Oh my God. But again, I had to like work. And I got this job. We moved out to Surrey then from Richmond. And there was a job like at this call centre, and it was like a fiver an hour, but it was like selling e-cigarettes to retail stores And I was just like, every day I was like, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine, it's work, it's money, get on with it, just do it. She like legs open, big bum, trying to sell like e-cigarettes. Yeah, and it was just like two trains to get there, two trains home. It was a lot. Like,
and did I read somewhere that you still have a pay slip from that time clipped to your desk to remind you?
Well, it was in my last house, actually two houses ago. Yeah, it was. But it, you know, it's not. There are a ton of people listening to this that are going through that. And that's, you know, there. How I always think this, Georgie, like when you're walking the streets, you never ever know who you're passing, what people are going through. If you come across a stranger in life, right, you know that more than anyone. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like you never know what someone's going through or what they have been through. And there's so many people living in that, like, is it like that fight or flight?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's like it.
And you know, it's one thing like working a shitty job for like no money, and it's another thing being heavily pregnant at the same time and having that fear. And there are so many people listening to that right now. And obviously there's people who are like, it's the same as my followers. It's like, I know for a fact that like there are millionaires following me, and there are people who are really struggling financially. And that, I feel like it's a massive responsibility in that I'm absolutely taking it on myself to talk to like people, like, number one, that everyone's the same, because they are anyway. And like, in that, it, I have to keep it at the back of my head that, yeah, there's people achieving like financially and that's great and everything, but there is so much struggle out there, you know.
But I think that's why you're so popular, is because you're very connected to that, and you're very real and humble and honest about your struggles. Like, for example, with your car, you know, you're just oh, it keeps breaking down and I don't know if I should spend the money on a new one, because you're going to have this chunk of money coming out of your account every week.
Yeah. Every
like
month.
That's why, like, people follow you, because that is the majority of people.
Exactly. Which is why I just don't understand. I know it's embarrassing for a lot of people to talk about their personal finances. I know it is. You know, there's shame attached to that, right? Like, there's, and it's very personal, and I am okay with, you know, I don't share everything, but I'm okay with sharing glimpses of my life and personal stuff like that. And it's not like, oh, why doesn't every blogger like talk about it? Like, you know, just do what you like, that's fine, don't talk about it if you, it's just that I don't feel there's ever anybody ever talking about that. And I think that's really important, because again, what does all that come down to? Why, what was I talking about this week in my stories? It comes down to having that front on and being on show all the time. And it's almost like, and you know what I was talking about, like with New York and stuff, living your life for other people and not for yourself.
It's that perfectionism thing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And that's really, it's detrimental. Like, it's like, what is perfectionism? Like, what's perfect? You know, it's your own version of perfect. You know, perfection is just happiness and whatever you feel is working for you. And
we are moving into a time now. Do you feel like there's a shift in realness now?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Do you follow Chessie Gang?
No.
Oh, she's a friend of mine. She's insane. Like, she has helped me so much. And like, it's people like that. Like, just if you're not like, if you don't have any self-worth, and if you're not like true, if you're not like honing in on what actually makes you really happy from a young age, you know, I think it's like really getting in there at the young age. How do you feel? Like, how do you feel? What makes you happy, you know?
And when did you think that your self-worth began to grow? Was that when you met Daniel, and or when you had kids? Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes. Like, Emer's changed. Like, that's it. Yeah, this was meant to happen.
How did you feel when you had your first baby?
Okay, so this is funny. When I had Saoirse, it was like everything, every bit of every last moment in my life, like, she saved me. Like, I had confidence that I was always pretty confident, but like, New York really broke me down.
Mm.
And I was so ashamed of that. And I would never, ever have imagined that I'd be talking to you about this today. Because I was like, New York's amazing. I'm living a fantastic life. Yeah, everything's going great. Like, what a lie.
I think as well, what we don't talk about enough and what we don't hear about, and, you know, it's not up to people on like Instagram or whatever, but from her the people we're in contact with medically throughout our pregnancy, like our doctors, our midwives, our health visitors, is prenatal depression. Okay, so we know a bit about like the postnatal depression. I had the opposite. So I was like, we're totally screwed. What am I supposed to do with my... there's so much I knew. There was so much I wanted to do in my life. I still wanted to travel the world. Like, no, Emer, all that's gone. All that's gone now, okay? Because you're having a baby now. And you're stuck with the baby forever. And you're never going to be able to do anything with your life anymore. And you're screwed, okay? Like, that was it. And I was so scared. Like, how much of a joke is it that, like, it... Like look at my life. Like, it's,
yeah,
that didn't happen, but like it was that huge fear. But there's so much more I wanted to do. And it was totally, it wasn't like I didn't want this baby. I really, 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 really wanted to have a baby with Daniel. I wanted to, like, I was so in love and I really wanted the baby. But it was also like, I mean, women are incredibly liberated these days. I'd done everything for myself, literally, like, since I was 13. And there was a lot more that I wanted to do, and there still is. But at the time, I was like, I was just really, really, really depressed, because I was like, how are we going to cope? What job am I going to get? I can't afford childcare. Like, there's no way we can afford childcare. What am I supposed to do in Surrey? Like, so Danny was working, before Saoirse was like about 5 months old, Danny was working two jobs. He'd do his labouring building during the day, and then he would do traffic lights with his brother in London from about 6 until about 3 in the morning.
What's that?
Putting in traffic lights.
Okay.
It's actually kind of cool though when we're like driving around London. He's like, yeah, put those in. Put those in. Put those in. He's like, wow! No, but like, it's... he worked. I cannot tell you. Like, I can't imagine how hard that would have been.
How did he function?
Like, he just like...
did it.
Yeah, I love that about him. Like, I just love that about him. I really miss him today because I'm talking about him a little.
Oh,
we kill each other, Georgie. You know this. The voice messages I was leaving you a few weeks ago. Oh my god. It's just really hard. I love him, but like now I'm just talking about so much like before that. Right now, I'm like, I'm thinking we've just been through so much since that, and you just forget all that. You just forget all of that when you're in the shit.
Mm.
Right. Saoirse, 5 months old, I discovered Depop. And I'd like always been obsessed with fashion and all that. And I was like, there's this like shop down the road that's like selling all this like amazing vintage stuff. Imagine this. Right, baby. Right, let's do this. Let's buy all this these vintage clothes. Iron them, wash them, like get them all like sorted, photograph them. I have the camera. Okay. Sell them for double the price on Depop. There's your food shop. Like, these are your skills. Use them. Like, you have options. Okay. Like, styling skills, photographing skills, communication. Like, you have the hair and makeup. You can do it yourself. Okay. So I was like, I need a selfie mirror. Okay. Local eBay. Daniel's van up to Staines one Sunday. It was 99p. Bought this huge mirrored wardrobe door. Just one. I mean, it wasn't a mirror. It was like a wardrobe sliding door. But I was like, that'll do. And Daniel and I went to get it with Saoirse in the car seat in the front of the van. Like, got it. And I was like, great, I can take selfies in that to like show the clothes and stuff. Uploaded them all onto Depop, which is still live. And I would get that money into my PayPal. And I mean, it wasn't like just the food, you know, it was like, I say that it was like just the food shop, but like, you know, just general living.
But that must have been so empowering that you were like, had created this little business. Something.
I remember when I was like in the lake around the the mill. We lived in this amazing like industrial mill. And it was... I was getting Saoirse to sleep in the pram, and I was bidding for the weighing scales, like the weighing scales that I needed, because like if I was weighing this, I needed to know how much postage was, because something like the bigger coats were obviously going to be like more postage than like the tiny tops, and I was like trying to get this like weighing scales for like way cheaper, and I was like, anyway, I got it, and I was like, yes, and I was just set up my Instagram around that time. Now, it was Instagram was just for my family and friends. It was not, I'd been doing tiny bits of blogging and I was doing a lot of photography, actually, personal, like just, yeah, like just in New York. Never like had like a blog there. And I, yeah, I was just like photographing and stuff and like putting in Melbourne, like putting tiny things in the blog, but it was nothing compared to like, it just, mm-hmm. it wasn't really a thing. So then I, yeah, I just set up my Instagram for like family and friends, and it was just like, I was kind of, I mean, everything is still there, you know, long captions, black and white moody photos.
So was there, there was never, it was never an option that you were going to go back to a normal job?
I don't know. I don't know. My priority at that time, I was obsessed with spending as much time as possible with my baby. Some people have a job and they're set up, and like some people don't and they're doing other things with their lives. Like, and there's definitely no right time to have a baby. But, you know, it was, I started working then for, Daniel and I actually split up for 6 months when Saoirse was a baby. And, you know, a lot happened to us in a very short period of time, and I just don't think we like coped with that really well. We're both very like strong minded, and when we did, he was living with his parents and I was at the mill with Saoirse, and like he was having her at weekends, like what was that time, and I started working for this girl that I started, like I got to know her through Instagram, and she owns a PR company, Amy, Lucky 8 PR, and she said I could just work from home. And like, I mean, PR was second nature to me, because I'd done bits like of like kind of work experience in New York with a PR place, and like PR is like you just have it from the get-go, like it's, yeah. So ended up like, yeah, doing stuff with her for a few months, and then yeah, people just started following me on Instagram, just like started liking my posts more. I just was getting like invites to events and stuff. Now I knew what bloggers were, because we were like gifting bits in the PR agency in New York. I knew what bloggers were, but I Instagram and blogs were very separate at the time, and I never knew how like people make money out of blogging. How? What? Like, I could not understand that. And yeah, companies were inviting me to events and stuff. Like, this was, when was this, 2014, 15? And yeah, and then like I was sitting at, like, with bloggers and stuff, and I was not, I still didn't know like anything about like blogging, or I think a couple of companies had like offered to like gift me stuff at the time, and I was like, what? Like, that means I can, my photography experience, my filmmaking experience, my styling, my communication, my producing, this is meant for me, like this, what I do today. And I still don't even know what I do. Like, it's not in the drop down box. Like,
it's amazing though, that because all of those skills make a perfect
career,
and you had all of them.
Yeah,
the stars just aligned for you.
Absolutely.
And your followers, were they a mix then of people from the UK and Ireland? Because most of the people that message me about you are Irish.
Yeah, so I have 36% from Ireland, 24% from London specifically, and then the rest is like Australia and America and Brazil, it's telling me.
That's a nice mix.
It's a lovely mix. Yeah. Yeah, it's because I don't I was saying, like, I haven't been to Dublin in 2 years. Like, I just, like, I love, like, I go back to Ireland, I come back to Ireland and I'm like a tourist. I love Ireland. Like, I come, I like literally feel like I just I've always loved Ireland, but when I go back, I go to Kerry now, because, like, I'm from Cork and I was raised in Cork, but we were in Kerry like about five times a year. My dad's from Castle Gregory, this tiny village in the west coast. My sister lives there now, and her husband, and like my niece and nephew and stuff. And it was like, they're down there so much more. So like, I do look at Kerry more like my home now. Like, I do love Cork, but it's like when I'm with the kids, you know, like it's a terraced house in the middle of the city. There's not as much to do. Like, when I go to Kerry, I'm just like, I feel so free, and they're like running around the fields, and it's just amazing. So like, I do prefer going to Kerry when I'm home, because I need it. Like,
there were so many questions coming in about how to balance busy work schedules and a relationship and kids, because you've got three kids under the age of five. Like, that is a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. And things like Daniel's work, I really admire him, because like the people that he was working for, there's some people that he was working for before, and like he's doing what they're doing, like what they were doing at that time, like he's doing that now. So like he's doing really well with his work, and it's like, it's just like mad timing in that like stuff started happening for me just completely organically. Zero, like I would not, like I have a business, but like I can't even talk about it as a business, because I have this thing in my mind that like a business is like, I need a briefcase and a 80s power suit and an office, and like I do not look like a businesswoman, and I don't feel like one either. Like I know I do, like my accountant would be like, you have a business. I'm like, don't call it a business, you'll ruin it. Yeah, stuff, and you know, stuff, but I have to accept that, I really do. And yeah, stuff just started really happening for us. And then in the mix of that, you know, like one of the biggest things that can ever happen to you, and hormonally and physically, that happened to me like three times. Well, four times, because I lost a baby after Saoirse. But like, you know, it just kind of all happened at once.
And but like you said before we started recording, like life comes in chapters. Like this is a very hectic and chaotic chapter for you, because you have a lot, and you know, you're so honest on your Instagram stories, and you had a little cry a while ago, and I think people were like, so I got so many messages when I put it out, if anyone had any questions for you, just from people saying thank you for crying on Instagram. Thank you for being like, real.
I know, but it's like, it's almost like bad that like I feel the same. I'm like, when I see people kind of like being like that, and I'm like, it's like this relief, so I can feel better about myself when I see somebody like being, yeah, there's like being real, but it's like, it has to take for somebody to be like going through shit for us to see that, for us to feel better about ourselves, right? Like, because we feel comforted that we're not the only ones, right? And that's to be remembered. Like, I think that's like the most important thing. Like, you're not alone.
And that's why I created this podcast. To show people, you know, like, because I was very good at speaking out about how I felt. So therefore, I was getting support from obviously my family, but strangers too.
Yeah.
And then I thought about, what about the people who suffer in silence, who don't say it out loud?
You have the skills to communicate. And this is another thing that I learned about myself, about Daniel. And you learn so much about people as you get older, especially, you know, after having children and everything. And that, like, everyone's different. And right, I find it very easy to communicate, okay? I am shit at other things that somebody else might be really good at. You definitely find it easy to communicate, you know, and to express your feelings verbally. A lot of people aren't like that. Like, Daniel's not like that. Does that make him a better or worse person? No, he's really good at like other stuff. But like, it's the understanding and the compassion and just being more considerate for when people are going through shit, that people deal with things differently, you know?
Are you good at giving yourself a break?
No. We all know that. So I have a hunger for living an amazing life, and for living a life that I've ever dreamed of, that I only ever would have dreamed of. And I put a lot of pressure on myself. I learned so much about myself this week, in that I will be totally honest about this, and this is also something that I've never heard like people talk about. I'm currently feeling like quite lonely when it comes to this. You know, there's a lot of healing that needs to happen within my own family, not with Daniel, but like with my mom and dad and my sisters and everything. So we're going through a bit of a process with my family, okay? So I'm feeling, do you know the way, you know the way we talk about when I was feeling that? You know, you see loads of posts on Instagram or whatever, or like articles written about when I was going through it. Like, I'm going through this right now. Mm. Like, I stopped going on camera for like ages on my Instagram stories, on my Instagram, because I was like, you know that like putting on not a show, but like putting yourself on camera all the time, you know that's not good for you all the time, and it's not. And it's like, I noticed that, like, I don't pick up my phone as much when I'm feeling like really happy. And like it's the validation. This is where I'm getting to, right? It's like, it's the validation of the comfort of the connections online. But then that really worries me, because I'm like, you never really know who's looking, and you never I definitely have like huge connections to people and my followers and like people that I've met through Instagram. But I'm like, why did I feel the need to like kind of, I didn't plan on crying on my Instagram stories. Like I didn't, it just came out. But I was at a very vulnerable moment in that day. But it kind of worries me that like, did I feel like I was subconsciously looking for attention? Well, maybe I was, because I'm going through something, like I'm going through a lot of shit at the moment, you know. But I think in a positive way, it means that like I do, you know, like feel a lot of like comfort and validation and attention, like positively, like from my Instagram and what comes with it. But I think there's a fine line, and I think you have to be really conscious of that. I think I'm just kind of overthinking it, because I have to. Like I have to think about like how social media is like affecting us today, and from someone who's like doing it for a living, I have to think about how is this affecting me in like other areas of my life? Is this, like, I think it just like freaked me out a bit when like one of my friends was like, yeah, I'm just going to stay home. Like she cancelled like a communicative time and time that we were supposed to spend together, because she just wanted to like stay at home and like put up photos on her Instagram for the night and like be on Instagram. And I was just kind of like, what? Like, stop alienating yourself. I listened to an interesting podcast last night about like, you know, the relationships that we're building virtually. But is that leading to like alienation?
And Alison Canavan said that, like, what are we not saying yes to, like meeting up with people? And
yeah,
you know, we're all getting really good at saying no, sorry, that doesn't suit me. But what are we not saying yes to, like the yoga class or the lunch with the best friend?
Really important to talk about, like, yeah, like it's great. And you know what? The fact that we're sitting here together, and the fact that like a lot of people are going to be listening to this because they saw it promoted on Instagram or on the internet, that's amazing. But you have to be so conscious for your mental health, like long term, that like you have to draw that line. And that brings me to what we were talking about a while ago about like, I now absolutely am in tune with when to pick up my phone, when not to. No, that's a lie. Not when to pick up my phone, but like if I'm picking up too much, I'm like, right, you're going away. Like, I don't bring up my phone a lot. Like, I'll go to Tesco's, do the food shop, go to the park with the girls. I'll go out for like a few hours and I'll leave my phone at home because I don't need it. I don't need to be checking it. Why do I need my phone? Nothing's going to happen. I'm going up the road. Like, I don't take it with me on the school run. I go to bed, I go to sleep. I cannot tell you how much, like, what that did for me, separating myself from my phone. How am I supposed to, right, content creation. So what I do for a living is I photograph and I style and I film and I communicate, okay? Like, the word influencer gets a bit of a bad reputation sometimes, right? Because there's a few who, like, put out a bit of an image and kind of like paint all the influencers with one brush, okay? What I do is I experience life and I showcase it on this platform, okay? How the hell am I supposed to keep enjoying life and showcasing it and documenting it if I'm bloody on my phone all the time, and if my phone is causing me anxiety, and if this suffers up here, then I won't be able to do all those things, right? So I need to put like plans in place, and I need to do things so that I'm
I continue to dream. I continue to create. I continue to be able to look into somebody's eyes and communicate with them. Because what your phone does is, like, it gives you social anxiety. Like, it does for a lot of people. Okay, not everybody, but, like, it does give a lot of people social anxiety. And that is fucking scary.
Why don't you share your kids' faces anymore?
Okay, so what I do for a living, I mean, it all started very organically, authentically. And when, you know, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes, from contracts to meetings that you just never see. You never see. And I do want to share more of that because it's all part of it. And all you see is, like, the end product. And, like, all you see is, like, the end, like, collaboration or the campaign or whatever. But there is, I find it really interesting. So, like, hopefully my followers will. So I do want to show a lot more to that. But you know, there is, it has become a job. And part of creating that job was, you know, I don't have a product. I don't have, like, a business. Like, I'm the product. Like, I'm the brand. I hate talking about it like that. Oh, it actually makes me feel sick. But it's true. It's like, you know, it's part of, I'm the charm, you know what I mean? And that's, I guess, why if you're following something, like, or a company or a person, like, you kind of take everything on yourself and you're doing everything yourself. But again, it's my job now. And, you know, at the start, it was like, it was following the journey of, like, me and what I was doing with my life and my children and, like, my work and all that. And I just started kind of reading articles and reading people's opinions about identity. And there's nobody else on this earth that looks like you, right? There's nobody else on this earth that looks like me. It's like, that's the only thing that we have that's precious to us. And I do a lot of, like, research, and I'm obsessed with reading about, like, data and how valuable it is, and our identity, and how, you know, I do adore social media, but how dangerous it is if you're not, like, weary of kind of what's going on with it, and about, like, protecting yourself with it as well. And I stopped showing their faces because I wanted them to hold on to and their identity for as long as possible. And I wanted them to, like, make the decision. It is my decision because I know the shit that can go down. I know what can happen if, you know, with putting myself out there. This is me. This is the gamble I'm taking. You know, it takes courage. Like, it takes courage to, like, put yourself out there. Like, please don't think that it doesn't, because, like, trust me. And I want them to make the decision if they want to put their identity and share with the world when they're old enough to understand what's going on with the world, if you know what I mean. Like, I do include them a lot, but I just don't show their faces. Like, I'm scared. I'm scared that when they're older, they'll say to me, like, why did you put us on the internet? Like, why did you make us part of, like, your job? And that's me personally. I don't care. If I have friends who are like, who put their kids on Instagram all the time, I don't care. I don't care what you do. You know what I mean? Like, everybody has to respect what everybody's got their own issues.
You seem like you're figuring it out still. Yes. Every day. And do you feel like you're in a good place at
the
moment?
I feel so. In some ways, I'm going through a lot of shit with, like, certain things. But I feel like it's all positive. It's all about being self-aware. It's all about, like, knowing what your flaws are and trying to, like, fix them, and trying to be a bit more, I'm trying to be more considerate, you know? I'm trying to be more considerate with the world. I'm trying to be a bit more, I feel like I was extremely selfish before I had children. And, like, I never wanted children. Yeah, and I was like, she was, like, the best thing that ever happened to me. And I feel like I really am figuring out so much about myself, and
good things, bad things. It's just about being self-aware. And I think, like, if you open that up, you can really heal, you know?
I think you're amazing. You're so, like, such a lovely person inside and out, and thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you. We didn't even discuss like half the things.
I know.
There'll be a follow up. Thank you so much for having me.
It was amazing. And like, I can see how like all of these, well, do you know what, I got more comments coming in saying, please just tell Emer, I think she's amazing. More than questions, just so many comments.
Yeah,
like,
I'm
that.
Irish and I can't take that compliment, sorry. But thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, made possible by Fitbit. Fitbit wants you to be empowered by providing you with personalized data about your health so you can make positive changes to lead a healthier lifestyle. Life is about balance and action, not lots of distractions. Get to know yourself better and understand your health with Fitbit. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please rate and review and follow me on Instagram at Georgie.Crawford.